I'm in my third month. I started at the very end of May.
Well, it really is an interesting time for the Food and Drug Administration, and I know you have a lot on your plate to try to get to. So let's start with that. You know, the Food and Drug Administration had some issues, especially with food safety, that they've been dealing with. Really has been spanning through the Bush administration, and now with your administration, you know, there are some high profile problems, peanut butter and spinach and other issues. You know, has that been dealt with, do you think, sufficiently in your view?
Well, I think, you know, FDA is involved with so many issues of great importance to the American people. Food safety is one. Drug and medical product safety, as well as cosmetic safety as well. So we have a lot on our plate. There have been a number of high-profile issues that have raised attention and concern about areas that FDA is responsible for regulating. It has brought, I think, an important new focus to the role of FDA. With that has come new resources, and I hope with new leadership as well, we will be able to make very significant strides forward to fulfill our mission, which is to protect and promote the health of the American people.
And Dr. Hamburg, when you came in, it was more than just a change of administration. I think it's fair to say there was a major change in philosophy going on toward how industries are regulated. But before you can get to all that, how did you find the morale at the agency? How are things looking to you just walking in and looking around these first early days?
Well, it's a very dedicated and very expert staff at the FDA. People are there because they care about the mission, because they want to help to protect the health of the American people. And they come with strong backgrounds in science, in medicine, in public health, in law, and, of course, you know, a set of support staff that really make the place run. So I came in to find, you know, a very dedicated and committed crew, but individuals that had felt that the agency had been battered, you know, a number of highly visible incidents, the foodborne illness that was just mentioned, mm-hmm. some issues around drug approval and safety, some other concerns about political interference with decision-making, all had taken a toll on the agency. And clearly one of my important tasks as the new commissioner is to both restore morale within the agency and restore trust and confidence in the FDA, both amongst the public and policymakers.
How do you go about doing that? I mean, do you go through, talk to your scientists about whether they feel some of their research was either didn't reach the you know, the forum that they felt it should, or was misused in certain ways? Or how do you go about evaluating whether or not their issues or complaints are real?
Well, I think that there are a number of important steps, and we're well on our way, I believe. One is just getting out there and talking to people, going around to the different components of FDA, talking to people, meeting them, hearing their concerns, not just talking to the highest levels of leadership, but really getting out and talking to people about the jobs they do, the challenges they face, the ways that through my leadership in the office of the commissioner, we can help them do a better job. Also going outside and talking to critical stakeholders. The FDA has to intersect and partner with a wide range of groups, with, of course, patient and consumer groups, with professional organizations and societies, with the regulated industries, with other parts of government, other federal agencies, and government at the state and local level. And, of course, we're operating in a global world these days, and so we also have to look overseas, working with industries that are based overseas, working with governments overseas, and addressing the important issues of how can we protect people here from threats that may actually begin overseas in terms of the safety of the food and medical product supply.
Yeah, recently I think the first FDA people went to China and established themselves there. Do you feel that is it still too early to tell, or can you feel like the agency is starting to get visibility into that supply chain in the drug area?
Well, this is a very key area, and it has to do with the supply chain and production of medical products as well as food. Mm-hmm. We're importing food from all over the globe, and some of the foods we import, particularly fresh produce and seafood, are among the most vulnerable in terms of contamination threats. So this is a key area for the agency. I think that this is the moment when we have to really step out and establish very clearly our global footprint. We have to do it very strategically. We have to do it in partnership with other countries and with international organizations and with industries that are based overseas and multinational industries, because the terrain is vast, the challenges are huge, and the importance of doing it right is absolutely central to protecting health here at home.
We're talking with Dr. Margaret Hamburg, Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. She joins us in studio to talk about some of the new challenges ahead for FDA and how she'll go about addressing them. So talk to me a little bit about the scientists at FDA and their mission. In the Bush administration, through many enforcement agencies, I don't know about the FDA, but the others that I am familiar with, like OSHA, labor, there was a partnership between the agency and the companies that they were overseeing. How do you view that relationship with industry? Clearly, you have drug companies, you have food companies, you are the regulator. What do you think that relationship should be? Is it a partnership, or is it, are you the regulator and the bottom line, and will things change under your guidance?
FDA has a very important and very unique role in terms of regulating a huge range of products that Americans use every single day. Food, drugs, medical devices, diagnostics, cosmetics, products that emit radiation. It's a very long list, things you use every day from the time you wake up in the morning till you go to bed at night, whether it's toothpaste or your lunch or cream you put on your face or medications you may need to take. So that is very, very important that we take that responsibility very seriously and that we do it right. And the way to do it right is to do it based on science. We are a science-based, science-driven agency. We're a regulatory agency, of course, but all of those regulatory decisions have to be grounded in good science. Now, the challenge, of course, is that sometimes we have to make important decisions with imperfect data. Sometimes we have to make decisions where we don't have the nice scientific studies all lined up that give us an absolute answer. So it's also very important that we have systems within the agency to ensure that on important questions of science, we have all the right voices at the table, that we have internal expertise brought to bear with robust discussion and science-driven decision-making, and that we bring in outside experts to also help us in this important task.
So you're saying that for industry, it's trust but verify.
Absolutely.
And do you think that occurred in the past?
I think that there certainly have been some episodes that you can look at and say that the integrity of the scientific process was interfered with. And that concerns me deeply. And I certainly have made it very clear from day one that we want to have a clearly defined scientific process and we will adhere to it and we will have internal controls in order to ensure that's the case. And we will rely on the media and the Congress and others to help us stay on that important path.
There was a recent case where, as a matter of fact, it was in the New York Times yesterday, where the director who was in charge of overseeing medical devices had stepped down because of complaints internally from scientists that said basically that their recommendations were being ignored. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Well, let me be clear. Dr. Schultz, who was or is still the center director in the device area, has made an enormous contribution to the FDA, 15 years of service. He has left a very strong legacy. But this is a time for some leadership change, and there have been concerns within the device center. There also, I think, is a recognition that some of the ways in which we do business reflect a very different era in terms of where science and technology is, and that it's important not just to look at leadership, but it's also important to look at how we do things. I want to take a very serious look at the nature of the review process for devices. Devices have become much more complicated, much more sophisticated, and much more invasive in many ways. And we need to make sure that we have a review process that is appropriate to all of the products that come before us. Devices is one key arena for attention. And so, you know, we're looking in a systematic way across the agency at how we can address the challenges of the world we live in the best possible way. And strengthening science is one key component. Improving procedures within the agency is another key component. And it's very, very important that FDA continue to get the support and resources that it needs. I think it should be recognized that for many years, FDA's needs were underaddressed, and that we have been in a situation of having to deal with a range of critical issues to the American people, critical governmental functions that no one else will do them if we don't do them, but we haven't been given the resources we need to do the job and to do it well.
And we've been talking about the range of activities that FDA is involved in. And the question of resources, as you mentioned earlier, always comes up. And two of the areas where resources have been questioned at the FDA is one in the quality and whether the labs themselves, the facilities, are up to snuff and if there's enough money to rehab them for the, you know, expanded mission, and also the information technology that supports all the scientific work. So tell us your resource plans and what you found when you got there. Does it look like you have what you need to carry out the mission as you see it?
Well, you've identified two key areas of activity, and there are critical needs with respect to labs, with respect to information technology, and other arenas of activity. I see one of my, you know, important roles as really advocating for the department and its needs. I was very encouraged when I first started making visits on Capitol Hill as part of the confirmation process to see that across the board, regardless of political stripe, the members of Congress recognized the important and unique role of the FDA and wanted to support it. That is new. It's in recent years, really, that there has been this mobilization of interest and support in FDA. I hope to continue that. It is essential that we have the resources that we need. Laboratories, you mentioned. If we don't have quality labs, we can't do quality science. And if we can't do quality science, we cannot ensure the appropriate and efficient review of medical products. And if we want to realize all of the opportunities in science today and the investments in biomedical research, we need to have a strong regulatory science effort at FDA that will enable new discoveries to come through the pipeline, be reviewed by us, and get out to the people who need them.
So, are you there yet, do you think?
Does your 2010 budget reflect that?
Our 2010 budget is very promising in terms of a historic increase for FDA. We need new resources in a number of critical areas. Food safety is one. Medical products is another. We also are starting up a new activity within FDA. In recent weeks, the president signed into law new legislation for the FDA to regulate tobacco products. Mm-hmm. So we are right now standing up a new center to focus on this. The legislation came with resources, so I'm very optimistic. We are attracting a huge amount of interest. Very able people are applying to us for key jobs. And I think this is going to make a real difference. Tobacco is a deadly product. Tobacco products represent the leading cause of preventable deaths in this country. And FDA, as a science-based regulatory agency with a public health mission, is the appropriate place for tobacco regulation. to be undertaken, and we are very excited and taking on this new role.
How many people will be in that Office of Tobacco Regulation? I know that you, I saw the announcement actually for the director of the Office of, I don't exactly know what the title is, but I know that that was floated just a few months ago.
Well, we are on the verge of announcing a new director for the center. I'm afraid I'm not going to make news here this morning.
Oh, come on.
But it hopefully will be, you know, within a matter of days or weeks, and, very excited about that individual and the leadership that will be brought to the center. And over time, it will be several hundred people working on a range of important issues.
Will they come from outside the agency or inside?
It will be a combination. We're going to draw on expertise within the agency, but also bring in outside assistance. As I mentioned, a huge amount of interest in joining that center to work on the important issue of tobacco product.
Will that center be located at the same major campus that you have in White Oak, Maryland?
Yes. Now, we are continuing to build that campus. It's a very lovely facility, and I'm so grateful for the leadership on Capitol Hill and within the Department of Health and Human Services that enabled us to have that space for a unified FDA campus. The good news is also the bad news there, though, that FDA is expanding, and we've already outgrown the original master plan for that campus, so we're now scrambling to identify opportunities to build some new buildings and expand.
Wow.
Well, that's probably good news for you, actually.
Absolutely.
We're talking this morning to Dr. Margaret Hamburg, Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. I know, Tom, you had some questions about IT capability and expansion there.
Yeah, because that's come up in news stories from time to time that just the IT that supports the labs and supports the scientists is pretty outdated, and FDA's kind of behind the times in getting that all updated. Is there a plan to push that ahead as well, the information technology?
Well, there have been some significant new investments in the IT area. There's been a huge expansion in terms of the core infrastructure capability, and now we really need to focus on making sure that we marry the infrastructure with the application. And there's some very sophisticated opportunities here to apply IT to the work we do. Areas like post-marketing surveillance, where we can use huge data systems to enable us to identify more rapidly and more effectively when safety issues related to a drug or vaccine that's being used in the community, and then we can investigate, respond appropriately. So being able to use IT for those purposes will be huge. Just to manage the amount of data that comes into the FDA in a efficient and effective way is a huge challenge as well. And it was identified appropriately that this was an area where FDA was lagging, and we are moving towards getting up to speed. I wish I could say that the problems were solved and we were fully where we need to be. This will also, of course, be a moving target as both technology and demands on IT evolve over time, but it's an area of huge focus and importance.
And I wanted to focus on investigational drugs. I know you have a final rule that you're putting in place that will give people greater access, or at least access to information about the drugs and access to them. Why do you feel that this is important?
Well, it's very important to the FDA and to the American people, because we know that there are people that are seriously ill, sometimes terminally ill, that don't have access to drugs. Sometimes these are experimental drugs that aren't yet proven, but when you're at the end of the road and you don't have other opportunities, people are willing to take considerable risks and would like to have access to as yet unproven drugs. There has to be a balance, though. We can't just give drugs out when they aren't proven, both for safety and for efficacy. So we need to also make sure that these still investigational drugs are studied so that we can demonstrate whether they in fact work. So there has to be a balance, but we think it's very important that when we can support people who are desperately ill and seeking whatever measures may help them, that we provide information that they need about opportunities to potentially access drugs through clinical trials or other mechanisms, but we also help to make drugs available to them, working, of course, with the companies that produce those drugs, if that's their only option.
Will that be a website that the FDA will stand up?
Well, we will have this information available on our website. We will also be working as closely as we can with patient groups and consumer groups to make them aware of the resources on the website and how to access other information, and working with healthcare providers because they don't always know what options might be available for their patients. And so we want to cast as wide a net as we can to make people aware of these access issues and support people, doctors and patients, in helping them to get what's needed for medical care.